Welcome to Pharmacy Fika, the podcast where pharmacy educators come to refuel and reflect.
Just like a Swedish fika, this is your opportunity to pause and enjoy a beverage and something nice to eat.
At the Pharmacy Fika, we explore teaching and learning and how to navigate the highs and lows of academic life.
Think of it as a coffee break for your academic soul. So grab your favorite beverage and let's dive into today's conversation.
Hey, everybody. It's good to be back on the Pharmacy Fika. This episode's going to show up, I think, in the podcast feed in March. And we've been talking for a while now about different aspects of teaching and learning that we think are really important. So a couple of weeks ago, Kristen recommended that we do an episode on feedback. Unfortunately, Kristen couldn't make today's podcast recording, but she did recommend to us a book. Thanks for the feedback. And we hope that all of you in the audience will chime in on some of your best feedback techniques. But before we get too deep into this, as always, a fika starts with some beverage and some snacks. We're recording this late in the afternoon, so I suspect Jeff and I don't have much in the snack category. But what do you have, Tina?
Well, I've received some feedback from some of our listeners who said that it's so great that we try to pick healthy things, some of us more healthy than others, but is there any shame in occasionally treating yourself with something, you know, a small dose of something that's not quite as healthy? Thank you, Caroline Sasser. I said, you're right. We should not make it sound like the only way to be happy is to have 8 almonds. So I picked some treats from Australia. One's called Minties. These are like when you went to the county fair where I'm from, once a year, you got this taffy and they taste like that taffy to me, only they're much more like, if you have a dental friend, they will look at you in horror if you bring Minties. And then the second thing is something called Curly Whirly Squirrelies.
Like Cadbury.
Yeah, Cadbury. The Curly Whirly is a candy bar they have here. But if you don't want a whole candy bar, you can just get one of these little squirrelies. It's chocolate and caramel. It has a great name. Gotta love that. So I'm choosing 2 unhealthy treats, a minty, which I can't eat till afterwards or I won't be able to talk, and a squirrely.
So from here, the picture of the squirrely looks like worms to me. So it's like Cadbury worms.
Yes, yes, okay. Exactly.
Hey, are the minties kind of mint flavored?
They are. Kind of mint taffy, but very hard on dental work.
As all taffies are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a sweet tooth myself, but I try to keep candy out of my house because it'll be gone. How about you, Jeff?
Just got a water. I just finished eating dinner. So if we want to know what that was, I had some smoked salmon and a salad. It was really good. And a banana. And I'm still hungry, but it's like there's no snack food that's going to feel that right now.
Well, I haven't eaten my dinner yet. I'm going to be going and doing that short. I bought for my wife one of these drink mates. It's like carbonate your water with it and you put various flavors in it. So today I flavored up with strawberry mango flavor. It actually tastes pretty good. And so I brought that with me to drink. So this carbonated strawberry mango drink, but I do not have a snack because, well, yeah, I'm going to be eating shortly. But I've been sipping at this most of the day. It's kind of fun. So feedback. Yeah, that's our topic today. We all understand that feedback is such a critical element of the teaching process. In fact, many would argue it is the essential element of teaching, is providing feedback to students. I think there's 2 aspects to this, or maybe there's more, but 2 that I thought about. The first is giving feedback as a teacher. So someone who is providing feedback to someone else. And as teachers, we do it with our learners, but we also do it with each other. If you think about grants and papers and all sorts of things where we're providing feedback to someone else. So there's the art of that. But then there's the receiving feedback. And we're all recipients of feedback. And how well do we do that? Do we actually receive the feedback in a way that is actually helpful to us and we can make positive changes in whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish based on that feedback? And some of us are better at receiving feedback than others, right? I'm not sure that we actually teach students how to receive feedback. And that's an important skill to develop. I know I never was taught it, and I feel like I'm still not very good at it. So anyway, so those were my initial thoughts on this, and I don't know where you'd like to begin.
This is probably 15 years ago. I think as educators, we thought we were giving students a lot of feedback, but their perception was that they did not receive feedback. And I was at a conference and I heard Jennifer Danielson present about a technique that she had used where she actually held up a sign that said, "This is feedback." And she said, it's because we don't signpost the feedback that we give to students. They don't recognize it as feedback. So I took that to heart and I took that technique through UCSF and then at Monash. We actually ended up agreeing a shared feedback process that we would teach and that we would use across all the courses. So we did some training for our teachers. Not that people weren't giving feedback, but we were like, it will scaffold and signpost this better if we use a shared framework. So we had the same sign. On the front, it says, "This is feedback." But on the back of the sign, it's laminated, the feedback process we used, which was ask, tell, ask, act. And the feedback elements that we use, which were always keep, start, stop. So in some ways, I think the feedback process starts with recognizing what is feedback and are people in a place that they are able to receive that feedback or give that feedback.
Well, you mentioned a specific process, and I don't know, Jeff, you have a specific process.
I don't use anything that I would say is a framework. I know there's ways that I do it, but it's a little bit dependent on the situation. So one of those today is actually did a peer evaluation of teaching today for a junior faculty member. And when I do those, I mean, and she knew that this was a formal evaluation. She's expecting feedback. But even then, I usually start with letting them, so tell me how it went for you and what do you think went good and went bad. And then I can play off of that. And I think that comes off a little better of letting someone else sort of like, yeah, I know I didn't do this right. It just sounds better than someone else coming at you first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. And that gets to the ask component. Mm-hmm. Ask people about what they thought about their performance and what they'd like to work on before you put in your two cents about the things that you observed. Mm-hmm.
I think that's so important because when your trainee is saying, I felt like it went okay, but here were some things that I could do better, and that's pretty aligned with what you think anyway, you probably think that has a positive prognosis for improvement. If what they say is, I think it was great, I can't think of a single thing I could do better, and you're thinking, this was like in the bottom 10% of performances I've seen or whatever. That's a person that you're like, okay, how I broach this is going to be very different. And I may have to break it down and say, instead of giving you the 25 things you could do better, I'm going to focus on the two that would probably be most powerful for this time. And you work on those two. And it feels very intuitive to me as a teacher not to give you everything. If you're so far away from being able to receive that, it's probably not going to be effective anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of techniques that are out there, but generally the process that I tend to use is beginning by asking some questions about their own thoughts, about their performance. A lot of people use the sandwich technique when they are giving feedback. Then the technique, for those who don't know it, is, you know, start out with something positive to affirm about the performance. The meat of it is the things that you think could have been performed better, and then ending with some positive things again. I typically don't like that because as a recipient of it, I see it right away and go, just give me the meat. Okay. Just get to the stuff that I can improve on. I don't need to hear a lot of affirmations. But we know some learners need it because they're not aware of what they're doing well, and we need to affirm that for them. I'm not sure the sandwich technique per se is the best way to deliver that second piece after you've asked them about their performance, but it's one that's commonly used for sure.
Yeah, and I was actually taught a little bit about this a few weeks ago in my management class and about the feedback sandwich. I don't know if it's the more recent or the actually only research on the feedback sandwich is just not that effective, right? Because typically one of two things will happen. Either you ignore the first part, you ignore the bread because you're just waiting for the beat, or you just like, you taste the good bread and you taste the end and you forget about the middle. And I mean, both of you probably heard this called. It also has other terms, right? There's a more crude term, but I guess the one we can say is the dirt sandwich. Yeah. And it doesn't matter like how good the bread is, it's still a dirt sandwich and you're going to taste the dirt.
It doesn't have as much alliteration as the other one, but it still gives it.
Yeah, so I've typically not provided feedback that way. It depends on what the person says, right, at the beginning. And if they're saying a lot of negative things about their performance because they tend to be self-effacing or have low self-confidence or they're very disappointed in themselves, then I might pull it back and say, well, let's start with some of the positive things. And what do you think you did well? And I can tell you what I saw that I thought was good, a positive sign. And maybe that's even to say something along the lines of, well, I think it's a positive sign that you are willing to make improvements. And that's a really good learning behavior that you can be self-critical. But I don't want you to be too self-critical because there's some good things here, right? So,
and I think that's the key piece of making sure the individual comes away at least feeling hopeful, positive, there's something there. And my daughter's pole vault coach, when we were just talking about this, and the one thing she really likes about her coach now is that no matter how bad practices are, meets are, like it just doesn't go well, or the thing they work on just doesn't happen. Like if it's really bad, he will say, well, at least you did this, or at least you did that. At least you got your run down, or at least your plant was good. And you can work on this again the next time, but doesn't leave them dejected. And I think that's probably the thing in any feedback we give. We don't want to leave someone dejected.
Yeah. Like there's no hope.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder a little bit of crossover with that motivational interviewing science about listening, you know, a scale of 1 to 10, Jeff. Where 10 is your best ever performance and 1 is absolutely terrible. How do you think you did? Oh, you said a 4. So what made it a 4 for you? Well, I said 35 times in my presentation and I just became obsessed with counting the in my presentation, you know, like, okay. But I noticed you didn't say a 2. So it sounds like there were some things you recognized as good. Oh, yeah, actually, the whole point came across great. My slides were wonderful. Maybe it's not the feedback sandwich, or the dirt sandwich or the poop sandwich. It's the science sandwich. What other behavioral sciences can we employ to help us make our feedback better?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think that's a really great strategy to use in terms of getting a person to state where they're kind of at, and then create discrepancies for them. Like, okay, you didn't say it was this. Why wasn't it a 2?
Yeah. You know?
And why? What could have made it an 8? Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that really gets people to think about their performance and what were the elements that they're judging their opinions on. And often when you do that, you don't have to say very much. The learner is evaluating themselves and coming up with things that they want to do. That's not always the case, as we know. And the student's evaluation of their own performance might be quite inflated.
Or deflated. I've had people say,
"Yep,
I thought it was a 0. And you're like, to me, it was an 8.
Yeah. The big discrepancy between where our expectations are and they are. So how do you handle that? What do you do to help bolster the student who's feeling really crushed by their performance? And what do you do for the student who is way, like the Dunning-Kruger effect is very evident. They don't have an awareness about how their performance really could be improved.
I think it's easier for the one who is deflated and underestimating than the overinflated. I don't know if I'd have ever done a good job of bringing someone back down to where they need to be. And not that it happens often. It's the 1 out of 10. I think it's just much easier for me to take someone who's overanalyze themselves and overly critical and help them realize that maybe it wasn't as bad as it seems. Or even if it was, to help them, give them tips or strategies to say, okay, this is now in the past. There's nothing we can do about that now, but going forward, here's what you can do.
I tend to focus, I sort of try to coach them. What evidence would you present that your performance was a 10? And I'm mentally thinking it's a 4. And it depends on what you're giving them feedback on. You know, sometimes you can use average performance. You know, you could say other people in your cohort are about here, but giving them some norm, sharing that with them so they see that the education system doesn't always provide them with that sort of dashboard.
Right.
And especially, I think, when it's sort of a micro improvement, like you did well overall, but in this one part of the task, we have some critical things that we have to increase. So yeah. I'll give you an example from a student situation. A student has learned the primary fact. They have learned that this medication can cause harm to a fetus. So you don't want to take it if you're pregnant. Okay. So that is the fact about the drug. And they know they need to communicate that to the patient. But they might say to the patient who's visibly pregnant or is revealed that they're pregnant, is your baby a priority to you? And so we have to be able to dig in and say, the fact, you know, that this should not be taken in pregnancy. So that's a good thing. How you've communicated that, what do you think the patient's likely response is? And this might be a standardized patient, might be a simulation. Hopefully it's a simulation. And being able to pick that apart of their sort of knowledge of the fact and being able to express that. So showing them perhaps some future consequences of that action, hopefully in a non-judgmental way.
Of course, rubrics are useful in all sorts of ways. One, to prime the student for the performance that we're looking for them to judge their own performance because they have some metrics or some descriptions of what the performance should look like. And then also when you're asking the question or when you go to give feedback is saying which of the areas on the rubric do you think you're doing well and where you're not. And then you could point out discrepancies that I think I understand that you rated yourself here, but one thing I didn't see was this, and this is probably why I would have rated it here, either higher or lower, depending on what you're rating. So I find rubrics is a great way to provide feedback on performances where you have a rubric. Of course, there's lots of times when we don't have rubrics to evaluate student performances, particularly when it's kind of an extemporaneous thing that you're doing on experiential learning. You haven't created a rubric for every situation. It only works on OSCEs or a paper or some other kind of thing that the entire class is doing. And so therefore it's helpful to create one and provide feedback that way.
I do want to say that sounds hokey, but a framework really helps because the giver gets some muscle memory about giving feedback and starts to say, okay, what action could the person take on the feedback? If I say this is the worst paper I've ever read or the best paper I've ever read, they really don't know what was great about it. And we can link it in the show notes. One of the most interesting projects I was involved with was, you know, giving students a peer-to-peer feedback, just that keep doing this, stop doing this, start doing this. Now, they're not as good at the stops. That feels a little confronting to them, but the keep and the start really changed the level of peer feedback from great job, nice work, to something that was actionable. And I was like, okay, if the peers can do this, can the teachers not do this too? So I actually think having a holistic framework helps to signpost that what it is and how to act on it, how to give it, how to receive it.
I really appreciate you saying that having a shared language and a shared framework for the entire faculty becomes very helpful. One is because we're doing it in a consistent way, and therefore it becomes much more obvious to the students and the learners. And if we all do it different ways, then it becomes much more challenging for the students to recognize when we're actually giving them feedback.
So Tina just said something that actually prompted me to think of something very basic that to say I really wasn't aware of with regard to feedback. Intuitively, maybe, yes. But, and I'll credit Melissa Medina with this when we were writing the paper on grades and the deficiencies. And, you know, one of the reasons we say we use grades is to give students feedback on their performance. You know, she broke it down into, well, there's evaluative feedback and there's descriptive feedback. And the evaluative feedback is the grade. You got a 92. Good job. And that, Tina, is like you said, is not necessarily helpful for advancing someone. It is the descriptive feedback of what did they do well, or why was it good, or why was it not good. And I realized most of the feedback I gave, whether it was on papers or assignments, was evaluative. And so I have to think about now when I'm giving feedback, it's like, don't just say, good job, nice work. Okay. Like, why was it good? Why was it not good? How could it be improved?
One of the things that I've struggled with, of course, we do a lot of assignments, which is to the entire class, and to provide a lot of descriptive feedback to each student individually. Let's say you're doing a writing assignment and you have a rubric, so you can score it on the rubric, which is more evaluative, right? You might be able to circle a word about the thing that they missed or what, but it still comes across to the student as evaluative. You haven't really told me how to improve my performance other than look at the rubric and what's there. But it's very time consuming to write a lot of written comments to help the student improve. So one of the things that I have done that I found helpful is to, after I've graded everybody's performance, is find some commonalities that are typical for the class. And to, when I report back out, grades are posted, here are the three areas that a lot of students didn't perform well on. And here are some of my recommendations on how to do better on that. So it's a feedback to the entire class. Mm-hmm. Those who perform well on it now understand that good performance, and those that didn't perform as well are getting some feedback from me, at least, about how to improve. It's at a global scale. It's not to them individually, but it's at least my attempt to provide some feedback on the most common things that I'm seeing in these papers.
I like that. I may have to use that on a time or two. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to go in the direction, and this is what I learned kind of the hard way with grading and giving feedback, descriptive feedback on 130 students for 10 assignments throughout a semester, was I learned after the first time was there might be 5 to 6 or 7 different things that are common among them all. And I finally learned to like type that out and put that in a notepad or Word document to the side. And so I just copy and paste. Like, that took me, you know, a semester to learn that, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that as well. I just have a snippet that's a quick cut and paste for the most common things I see. But I still find the summary to the whole class is a great way to give, this is areas where most people tend to need improvement, and this is how to do it. And I can be a little bit more elaborative there rather than a quick snippet that goes into their assignment.
Well, and I think those are the two most important things we've just shared with educators. It's probably not as huge a problem in the U.S. as is right now outside the U.S., where the cohort sizes are still big, 300, 350. And the idea of, first of all, everyone is absolutely a unique snowflake fingerprint, but the flaws fall into patterns. Mm-hmm. And you've been teaching this for so many years that you know what those common errors are going to be. So you can pre-write robust feedback about those things that you can pull in. In the meantime, while you're trying to give people something, and you can even pre-populate those nudges in there for the evaluators, keep, start, stop, and they can drag and drop short statements. It makes it a lot easier for them to do that quickly if you've kind of pre-built the nudges in. You you would know that as the expert. And the second thing is giving that cohort-wide feedback. You can do that pretty quickly. You can say, hey, this activity ended yesterday. While I'm working on your individual assessments, students who performed well overall tended to display the following characteristics. Those who struggled seemed to miss these key characteristics.
That's right.
So they're kind of primed to receive their individual feedback. And I think that's a very efficient and effective strategy. And for people who are really struggling, we want to give more feedback. We have to make it easier for people to do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All these things that you can do in advance is really very helpful when you have a large cohort that you have to provide feedback to. I want to switch gears just a little bit, which is we've talked about giving feedback, but receiving feedback. Mm. We all receive feedback personally, and yet we've never really been taught how to receive it, how to use it well. And I'm curious if there are techniques or strategies or things that you've learned over the years about how to receive back in a constructive way that really does help your performance. And I'll start with one suggestion. This goes for either performance evaluations or when you receive feedback on a grant or an abstract or a paper, is to read it and then set it aside for at least 3 days, because criticism feels like an attack on you personally.
I gave that advice today.
Yeah, you just need the emotional space, whether it's student evaluations, you're receiving feedback from students. You just need the emotional space, even if they're trying to do it as super helpful. It just feels personal.
I think the first thing I do, and I have over time learned, there are some personal attacks. There are some unactionable, worst course I ever took. A negative everything, whatever instrument you have to use, they've just gone down and put everything was terrible. And you're like, well, at least the learning objectives were in every section. You know, I had to provide those. I have developed a mental screen for screening out unactionable feedback to say that this is somebody's opinion, but there's nothing I can do with that feedback. Now let me focus on the actionable feedback. And then you try to find the quick wins. I'll never forget some first feedback. This was a long time ago when we had course packs that students went and bought at the bookstore. And the first one I didn't number the pages. They were like, oh my gosh, it's so hard to find things in the course pack because the pages weren't numbered. I can fix that. I can fix that, right? I do think giving that space, you don't have to solve everybody's issue in 3 days. You can chunk it up. You can also perhaps, especially if your university has a behind the firewall AI client, you can put all those free text comments in and ask it to summarize the key themes for you with examples for each one. I know a colleague who's done that quite effectively, and I'm like, how great is that?
Yeah, that's a great use of AI.
Yeah. And then you can ask it, you got to get good at prompting, but you can ask it to suggest interventions. Now, I'm not saying you just take exactly what it does and you don't look at it carefully, but it saves a lot of chi to have it sort of comb through everything and say the three most common positive comments were you were organized, you were, I know we're talking about course evaluations now, but it could be anything. It could be your grant evaluations as well.
Yeah, I've actually done that with my own evaluations a couple of times, and I've used ChatGPT and another AI to do that and to say, read this, give me the themes, give me the overall sentiment analysis and things or suggestions of things that could be improved. And like you said, you don't like just take it, oh yeah, that's the gospel, but it is a better way of kind of stepping back. And if you've received a lot of feedback that may not be easy to take, it does put it in a way that is much easier. And I've noticed I read something and I left it like not feeling good about this great evaluation, but you put it in it and it does a sentiment analysis and says, overall, like this is pretty good. Now there might just be this one thing.
Yes. Yes. And whether it's actionable, sometimes it's like the overall sentiment was, it was a great class, but it shouldn't be at 8 o'clock in the morning. And you're like, yeah, buddy, I agree, but somebody's got to teach it. Hey, okay, that's not really actionable by me, right? But it, organization, summary, key themes, active learning, you know, you can really get some good stuff from it.
So Tina, do you actually go through and code it as actionable or not actionable? Mm-hmm. In other words, literally, this statement is not actionable, therefore, I can't do anything about it. Don't focus in on it.
Yeah. And again, some of the reasons for using a framework is what we found, and this was with the team at Monash, by using the feedback framework consistently with students, they began to use it with us.
Yay.
So instead of taking that big blocks of free comments, they would say, keep doing this, stop holding class at 8 o'clock in the morning, start. And I was like, oh my gosh, unintended positive consequences, my favorite thing.
Well, that gets into another point that I wanted to make was, I don't think we spend any time teaching our students how to receive feedback and how to discern what's actionable or not and having a framework for doing that. We don't spend any time on it. Jeff, you teach about leadership and HR and all these issues. Is it something that you teach?
No. And I wish someone would teach me. If someone would say that how to receive it, that would be something like, yeah, I need to learn this. No, I don't do that at all. It's all about from the managerial side. This is how you give feedback to others.
Yeah. And I think that's why I was so hoping that Kristen would be here today, because the book, Thanks for the Feedback, is really about how to receive feedback. And I love their subtitle, which is The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well, even when it is off base, unfair, poorly delivered, and frankly, you're not in the mood. And I think that's a great title for a book, but that's often the case. Like, you know, sometimes it's poorly delivered, but there's stuff there that's useful to you. And sometimes you're not in the mood, right? And yet right. There's stuff there that's useful to you.
This is bad, but I'm in those situations. I have one response to that. And my response is noted. That's probably not in the book of how you're supposed to receive the feedback.
I love it. Once when I was talking to students about feedback, and I said, what is feedback? And in my mind, I'm thinking feedback is a gift. It's information you can act on. And a novice student says, it's when the amp gets too close to the mic and it makes that horrible sound. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like two different concepts. And they may be going into this. This is going to make a painful, harsh, horrible sound in my ear that I should run away from. Versus this is information that I can use to take action. But it really made me think. I was like, okay, we are going into feedback often assuming that we're talking about the same thing.
And I think other thing is feedback is often associated with just criticism, which is just hard, right?
Yeah.
Any last minute comments before we wind things down?
Well, I just wanted to say, we missed KJ in this episode, but sometimes life is complicated. And when you're part of a team, you step in and get things done and support one another. And that may be things that are happening to our listeners as well. Sometimes they're just not able to do something that they intend to do or want to do. And having that grace to be able to work through that, I think really shows the strength of a team.
Well, thanks for being here with us, all of our listeners. Thank you, Tina. And thank you, Jeff. We look forward to your feedback about our show. We'd love to hear from you about how we can make the show better or topics that you think we should be exploring in future episodes. So with that, I'm going to say good afternoon, everybody. We'll see you in a month.
Goodbye.
Good morning.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Fika, a podcast where we enjoy coffee and conversations.
If you liked this episode, please pass it along to a colleague and be sure to rate us.
You can share your reactions on Twitter at Pharmacy Fika, but please be kind. This is a safe space.
Got a question or want to suggest a topic for a future episode? Leave us a voice message at speakpipe.com/pharmacyfika.
Bye for now.
Namaste.
Das Vidanya.
Au revoir.